Baltimore.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here at WEAA and happy to be here at 80.9 and the voice of the community. Before we come back to Dr. Alonzo to take your calls and at 410-319-8888 or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, it's time for a little bit of news from WEAA and then we'll come right back to our conversation, our town meeting on our city schools. Stay with us.
Good evening. In the news, not guilty and not criminally responsible. That was the plea entered today by the Rockville man charged with killing his three children in a Baltimore hotel room. Margaret Burns is a spokeswoman for the city state's attorney's office.
Over the next several months, there will be a mental health evaluation determine whether or not he's criminally responsible.
Theo reportedly confessed to drowning his 2-, 4-, and 6-year-old children one by one in an Inner Harbor hotel room and then tried to kill himself. He was locked in a bitter custody battle with the children's mother. Prosecutors have yet to decide if they will seek the death penalty in the case. Castillo's trial is set for August. Two people are being treated at hospitals for exposure due to a mercury spill on Kent Island. WJZ-TV reports it happened at the AAMC Health Services building on Maryland's Eastern Shore. The spill has been contained. There's no word on the victim's conditions. It's life plus 30 years for a Baltimore man accused of robbing and then drowning and dismembering a man in his home in 2006. A Baltimore judge sentenced Octavius Savage today following the 22-year-old's April 2nd degree murder conviction. Prosecutors say Savage drowned 64-year-old Donald Russell in the bathroom of a house they shared on North Duklin Street before cutting his body in half and putting the remains in two storage bins. Russell's partial remains were found in Waldorf. Savage's girlfriend and accomplice, Tiffany Brown, pled guilty last August to conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. She will be sentenced on June 10th. Anne Arundel County Police say the baseball bat beating death of a man remains under investigation. Anyone with information about the attack is asked to contact detectives. The victim, 49-year-old Brian Myers, died last Wednesday, more than 2 weeks after he was struck in the head with a baseball bat during an argument with several teens in Glen Burnie. Police spokesman Sergeant John Gilmore tells WMER-TV police have arrested 15-year-old Kristen Schellenschlager of Glen Burnie and charged him as an adult with first-degree murder.
In addition to interviews of witnesses that were in the area of, at the time of the incident, in conjunction with actually interviewing the mother of the suspect, they were able to recover the bat.
An autopsy showed Myers died of blunt force trauma to the head. There's more tough news for motorists across the U.S. The latest Lundberg survey of several thousand gas stations shows the average cost of gas went up 17 cents a gallon in the past 2 weeks. The average price for a gallon of gas is now $3.79 across the country, with people in Chicago and Long Island, New York, paying more than $4 a gallon. Stocks were mixed today as investors' fears about a recession eased a bit, while concerns about consumer spending hurt the technology sector. The Dow Jones Industrial Average finished up 41 points, NASDAQ was down 13, and the S&P 500 ended up 1 point. Oil rose again by just over a dollar to $127.40 a barrel. The news is made possible in part by Ollie's Bargain Outlets. I'm Roserl Julian with news on WEAA, the voice of the community.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here on WEAA, the voice of the community at 88.9. Phone number here is 410-319-8888. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com as we talk with Dr. Andres Alonzo, CEO of the Baltimore City Schools, on our way back to the phones to talk to some of those many patient people waiting to talk. There are a couple of subjects we have to raise. We start one at a time. We'll go to a caller, raise another one, so we can try to get through some topics we have not covered. First of all, is the controversy around Canton Middle School. The Canton Middle School controversy is that some people in the community want the school to shut down. They want it out. The majority of children, not all of them, in those schools are African-American kids from neighborhoods just outside of Canton, though there are a number of working-class white kids and other kids who are white as well at Canton Middle. And I don't need to just put it in pure racial terms, but people see it as that. people can see it. People can't see it as a mostly middle class white community going, our kids aren't here. We don't want the school in our community. And there are kids in those schools. We went down there who are raising havoc in the neighborhood, who are calling people all kinds of names at the same time. There's tension there. And as someone said to me, this could be a situation actually ripe for something like Lauren Abramson and community conferencing to come in and kind of really work with communities and bring them together rather than seeing them blown apart. But talk about what's going to happen in Canton Middle and the controversies taking place there now.
Well, what's going to happen is that there is going to be a 6 to 12 school, grades 6 to 12, beginning with grades 6 and 9 next year.
What happened to 8?
Well, the...
Oh, I got you. 6 to go to 8 to build the middle school and 9
exactly,
to build the high school.
Exactly. Gotcha. Okay. Called the Friendship Academy for Science and Engineering that is going to open in that building. Friendship is a school presently in Washington, D.C. They just received an award from the College Board as an outstanding school because of the number of advanced placement courses that they offer. It's an extraordinary school. When we 90% of their students graduate within 4 years, 80% of them go on to four-year colleges. They don't select kids. They bring in kids through lottery, and the kids that they bring in are African-American kids, like many of our kids. So when we put out a call for partners for these transformation schools, they were one of the schools that we selected as potentially great partners for the system. They're going to start a school in the Canton Middle School building. This proved controversial for two reasons. Reason number one, as part of Facility Solution in the past, the neighborhood and the plan that was proposed to the state called for the closing of the building by the end of next year, number one. And I guess for many people in that community, this constituted a promise and an expectation that the school would not be there. Secondly, the decision to put the school there followed a very determined process to find space for the new school. We couldn't find the space for the new school, and we chose to open the school in that location. And for some people in the community, especially reacting to incidents having to do with kids from the school system in the past and recently, they felt that there should have been consultation and a process of communication that did not take place. Our communication was with the parents of the school who were invited to go to D.C. to see the new school, met the new partner and express, you know, overwhelmingly the desire to partner with a new school in the location. And to me, it's very, very simple. I need great schools in Baltimore City, and I need them everywhere in Baltimore City. And I cannot possibly have conversations that begin from the notion that there are places in Baltimore City where I cannot have schools. That's not an acceptable departure from a conversation. And what I hope from this is that the many, many people from Canton who have emerged in the past several weeks to say we do need a conversation to support the school continue to move forward in order to become partners for the school, because clearly, and again, I'm very consistent in what I say, our schools will not succeed until the communities all over the city become partners for the school and support the school.
The key to the future of Baltimore is schools that function, more than function, become excellent schools across
exactly.
the city, so that middle-class families, white, black, Latino, Asian, Indian, send their kids to public schools.
Correct. And clearly that is not going to happen if we create borders where the public schools cannot be. And I'm very respectful of feelings of people in communities about communications in the past or expectations about what should happen in terms of neighborhoods. However, my obligation is not to neighborhoods. My obligation is to the kids in the city and to the creation of schools that can become world-class schools.
Andres Alonso, CEO of our Baltimore City Schools, is our guest here on the special town meeting here on WEAA, the voice of the community, and I'm Mark Steiner. The number here is 410-319-8888, or write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. And Ricky, you're on the air.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
Hi, Ricky.
And I have been very patient.
Yes, you have.
30 minutes. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Mr. Steiner, Dr. Alonso, initially it was my intention to call to thank you for exposing yourself, making you available to have an honest dialogue with the community. But what made me feel a little ill at ease was that the gentleman who initially took the call and put me on hold to go on the air attempted to, but I resisted, screened my call. And immediately I said to myself, if Mr. Steiner's going to have the type of shows where you screen calls, that takes away from honest dialogue, and I will definitely boycott a show like that. So, nonetheless, I thank you for making yourself available to the community. And in the future, I hope there's no more attempts to screen calls.
And let me just say, Ricky, not to get into a sidebar here too much, but screening calls is not to keep people off the air, is so we can see where the flow of the conversation is going, know where we're going to go. That's the only reason we screen calls. I would never screen a call to keep you off the air, but you're on the air, so go ahead.
Let me say also that I have no clue who's calling or what they're calling about.
Right.
So as far as the content of what you're going to say, sir, and my ability to answer, I have no clue who's calling or why. So this is a very open conversation.
Has something to say that's controversial, that's not in tune with what you want to hear.
No, well, go ahead and say what you have to say.
I've already said that I appreciate Dr. Alonso making himself available to the community to have a dialogue because it's much needed. And
you there, Ricky?
School leadership, but I do appreciate this attempt to have a dialogue.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. And let us go to Maurice in Baltimore. You're on the air. Maurice, hold on. Let me just get you here. Go ahead. You're on the air, Maurice.
My name is Maurice. I'd like to speak to I thank you for taking my call, and thank you, WEA, for taking my call. My concern is Dr. Alonso is that he talked about volunteers for the upcoming year for the Baltimore City Public Schools. And I really think that the schools right now, the children are really, really, it seems to me, are really out of control. I'm a volunteer at a school, and if when you go into these schools and you see how these kids are acting towards the teachers spending 45 minutes for one class, and they take 35 minutes to calm down the kids. If anything could be done in the upcoming year, because sometimes you're really scared to correct the kids, you can't, the kids curse you out. And it seemed like it's. I'm trying to see where it's an end to this at, and then to get volunteers, it seemed like most of the teachers at the schools don't even want to be here, and the children come where they dress, you know. It seemed like I like where I work. I mean, I like where I'm volunteer at, but it seems like I'm trying to see for the upcoming year of 08-09. What could be done better? I mean, because certainly the parents, you got a whole lot of good parents, but you got some parents that don't even care about these children. So, I mean, when you say to get the kids and the community scared of some of these kids,
well,
I'm trying to see what.
Right. Well, what do you do as a volunteer very quickly, Maurice?
Yeah.
Oh, I just help with the lunches sometimes.
Okay.
I just help in the hallways, trying to clear the hallways with the kids in the hallways. But the language they use to you, and I'm 50 years old, and my own kids don't even talk to me the way.
I'm sure not.
These kids make you feel, and what's happening? You got good kids, but the bad kids is hurting the good kids.
Well, let me.
The teachers are real good.
So
at the school I volunteer, the teachers are very, very good.
So this is what you're raising here, Maurice, is a really important point, and I think that I hear from teachers. I hear it. Well, let me just throw this out to you. Teachers who you like,
yes,
like my son-in-law, Evan,
yes,
Sol,
whom
teaches,
I really like,
teaches at Carver, says that, you know, in his school, even though he goes out there to control the halls, kids are cursing, screaming, just disrespecting everybody all the time, which is not an uncommon occurrence at many schools.
But at the same time, and I don't want to lose this fact. Maurice, by the way, don't before you go, I would like to know what school you're in and also take you with me to another school.
And Maurice, let me do the call right back and we'll get that. Yeah. It's my fault. I clicked you off too quickly. But
because I think that part of what we're losing is that there are many schools where you walk in like I do every day and sometimes you see a problem. But then other times what you see is the right kinds of environments with exceptions, because there are exceptions in every single place. So that's number one. Secondly, you said something that I find extraordinarily significant. You say people are afraid of the kids.
Right.
No one, the people in this city cannot be afraid of the kids in this city. They're kids. That is such an abdication of responsibility.
Well, I have to start from saying, Andres, I mean, you say people should not be afraid of students or kids.
Mm-mm.
First of all, look, let's deal with reality here. Some of the kids we're talking about are tough kids who will get in your face and start something in a minute.
Absolutely. But at some point, they were not in somebody else's faith. They were second graders, third graders, fourth graders. And what we cannot forget is that something took them there. That's number one. What was it? It's not like they were hatched, then at the end of the third grade, they went away somewhere, and then they came back to the eighth grade, now being in somebody else's faith. What happened in between? Secondly, when you say be real, I think you need to remember what my experience has been as an educator. I mean, I spent an awful long time as a teacher of emotionally disturbed adolescents. So no one should be presuming to lecture me in terms of how the most extreme types of kids function in schools. And what I know from my own experience in places very much like Baltimore is that, yes, there is a pull, especially when we group certain types of kids in particular places and we communicate to them that there's no hope for them.
So, Maurice, that's what do you do about those kids now in the schools that exist? I mean, maybe if we turn things around, kids in the second and third grade now, in our public schools, it may not be like that when they're in the 10th, 11th grade.
I think we need to, number one, we need to communicate very clearly what our expectations are. Secondly, it cannot be simply punitive. It has to be about options that kids want to buy into. Otherwise, what we're saying is buy into this or you're gone. And we know that what happens afterwards is that they are gone, but they're gone after making life miserable for everybody else around them. I mean, in 2004, there were 26,000 instances of suspension in this city. Number three, what happens in classrooms and schools has to change so that kids become engaged in their education. We need to have more vocational programs. We need to have more mentors. We need to have more classrooms where the kids feel that this is where they want to be. And then finally, in terms of the schools themselves, there clearly has to be better leadership in the schools. And the reason why I say that is because you can have two schools, is the same argument that I have been making from day one. You can have two schools, same kids, 10 blocks from each other. In one school, you see certain kinds of behavior. In another school, you don't see the same kind of behavior. And that, to me, is because you have some places that have found the key in terms of working with kids, and other places haven't.
We're going to go back to the phones here. I'll tell you, there was one school we visited the other week when we did a Story Buddies program in elementary school in Baltimore, Windsor Hills Elementary, on the west side of town. I walked into the school. The walls were painted lively, student work everywhere. You couldn't hear a thing. The school was quiet. Students were learning. Kids were a joy. It was amazing to walk into a school, a zone school, that is run in a way that brings community in, and kids are actually learning.
Now you have
that's a zone school,
and and you can maybe go 15 blocks to another school, and you see an entirely different environment. And then the conversation is always about what are you going to do with those kids. And part of what I want to assert is that without in any way downplaying, you know, your son-in-law is somebody that I like a great deal, as you know, and who's been telling me from day one there are things that are going on that you need to be aware of. And I have tremendous respect for that. And part of what I want to have the conversation about in terms of the adults who I respect, who are telling me this kind of conversation, is what else is going on or is not going on in those places that leads to certain behaviors where if I go 10 blocks away, I don't see it. Part of what needs to happen, which is why in my conversation with Linda, I said it has to start at the school, not at the central office, is about what is there for the kids. Besides the punitive response or the statement that you cannot possibly tolerate these things, that engages them into a, it makes them partners in terms of what needs to happen. Look, some of the kids that have been out there calling for peer leadership, for example, and that has been in the news in the past couple of weeks or so, they are making the argument that part of what it's missing is a conversation that engages the kids in the solution about what needs to happen in the schools, because they feel that there's a potential in all the kids in the city that we're not tapping because of the fact that we're afraid of them, number one. And secondly, at some level, we abdicate the responsibility to engage their intelligence. And I agree with that.
Andres Alonso is our guest, CEO of Baltimore City Schools, a special live town meeting here at WEAA, 410-319-8888. And Stephanie, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Stephanie.
How are you?
Well, thank you.
Hi, Dr. Alonso.
Hi, how are you, Stephanie?
I'm doing well. As a parent of children who have since come out of the public school system in the 80s, I was really, really disheartened when our previous city administration lowered the passing grades to, I think it was 60 or 65.
Right.
And
to 60, actually.
60, right, to 60. Right. And both of my boys went to Poly. And I could not believe that not a parent in this city made an uproar about it. Because what it said to me, had my kids still been in school, I would have been marching down City Hall in a heartbeat. Because what it said was that our kids aren't capable of meeting the standards that were there, and therefore the city had to lower the standards in order to have the African-American children within the city to pass. My children knew better than to come home with a 65 or a 75, because I knew the potentials within both of them. And they went to Poly, which is one of the best public schools in this city. And to say that almost says that the city was willing to give up on these kids by lowering the passing grade level to something so low. How do they expect these children to get into colleges? And my question is to you is, are you going to stick with that of the lowering of the grade to a 60, because in actuality, you're not even equipping the children at a 60 level average. You're not equipping anybody to be sufficient work in the community.
It's two things. First of all, it's a board policy. So in order for
a board policy.
Yes, in order for it to change, it has to be something that is reconsidered by the board.
But you can have them reconsider it.
Absolutely. Then the second question is, especially in the new context of accountability that we discussed before about high school graduation, it's no longer about passing courses. It's about passing certain tests that validate that the student has mastered standards. And what is very clear is that we have been graduating kids who have not mastered standards. So the conversation really should be, and I agree with the caller that there's a question about what we expect from the kids that we always have to have on the table, because otherwise we're not thinking of what it means to educate them, which is that we have gotten used to a standard for children, and whether it's a 60 or a 65, look, a 65 is too low as far as I'm concerned, where we push kids through rather than educate them to standards that make them competitive with kids from other cities let alone kids within the city, because if your kid is in Pali, I mean, we know that that kid is outstripping many other kids within the city. So I think the issue is that, you know, we have low expectations for kids. It shows in what's going on in many, many places, not in all. And it's part of the problem that I see in terms of that conversation about what needs to happen in our schools.
So where do you take this? I mean, and Stephanie, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate you being part of this program today as we talk to Dr. Andres Alonso, CEO of our Baltimore City Schools, and a special live town meeting on the air at 410-319-8888. But what do you do to ensure in our city schools that these lovely children we met at Windsor Hills Elementary, who are just so full of learning, and what we know is that these exceptional children, when they get to 6, 7, and 8, go from the top of the chart to the bottom of the chart and start dropping out of school.
Same kids.
Yeah. So the middle school becomes a disaster ground. It's a tough period for kids no matter where they go to school, but here in the city, it's a disaster ground.
I think that it's not the middle school, it's the middle grades. Because we see, even though we don't see as much.
What does that mean, not the middle?
I mean that we have middle schools, and we have lots of our schools that have become K to 8s. So the kids are no longer going to a middle school. They remain within the same school that they have been since they started school.
You're saying that's a mistake?
No, I like it because it keeps the kids within a community that has raised them. It allows for a conversation about who's accountable for the kids, and it also keeps the kids next to adults who know them so that they should expect the things from them that they should. What we do find is that regardless of whether the kids are in middle schools or in middle grades, the outcomes decline over time. Same kid, the kid who was in the 90th percentile in the fourth grade, by the time they get to the eighth grade, they might be in the 40th percentile. So clearly, it's not about the kid at that point. It's about something else. And I think that that's part of the challenge of analyzing what is going on in our schools and in the settings that we create.
Very quick question. I'm going to go right back to the phones here. Very quick question, very quick answer. What is it then? What is it about schools that kids in the middle schools fall off so precipitously, but especially in our city schools where the kids are facing those problems they face in the streets and at home and other places, we lose them? I mean, it is a killing ground in many ways, emotionally and academically.
A part of it is curriculum, as in what is it that we're teaching them. Part of it is pedagogy, as in how is it that we're teaching them. And part of it is what's going on in the community and with the kids that leads us away from that kind of investment that we have when they're younger until to a kind of abdication where, look, I go into elementary schools and I see 200 parents there, and I go into some other schools and I see 20.
We're taking a short break. Right back with Dr. Andres Alonso at 410-319-8888 here on WEAA. I'm Mark Steiner. We'll come right back to Mike, who's been waiting for a while to talk to Dr. Alonso. Stay with us.
Looking for a way to expose your business to over 100,000 people weekly? Have you considered underwriting with WEAA? Well, why not? WEAA 88.9 FM is a public radio station that has served a loyal audience in the Baltimore, Washington community for 30 years. Underwriting provides expanded coverage, exposure, corporate prestige, and is a federal tax-deductible investment. Want more information? Contact our underwriting department right now at 443-885-4508. That's 443-885-4508. Call today to make a sound investment.
If you're ready to turn your life around and move to the top, then join me on Real Money. I'm Deborah Owens. My guest will be Dr. Suzanne Johnson Cook, author of Moving Up, Real Money, Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Ready, set, build. Take creativity to another level this summer with Operation Junk. Murray Educational Services is hosting a summer camp in Howard County for ages 5 to 11 where fun and creativity begin. It's a full-day program of creativity, innovation, and lots of fun. For more information, 410-736-2331 or weaa.org.
We'll be right back. back. I'm Mark Steiner, sitting here with Dr. Andres Alonso, a special on-air town meeting at WEAA 88.9, the voice of the community, at 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And as I said, Andres, I asked you a very tough question. It was long, but I gave you a short, didn't have much time to answer it. I'm sorry about that.
I said in the break wait a second. You just asked a $1 million question and you said answer in 20 seconds.
Well, take another minute, then we'll go right to the phones.
Well,
throughout
the nation, every single school system in the country is dealing with this question, because it's not simply about the urban schools. It's also the suburban schools. The outcomes drop. And everybody talks about how it's about the middle school kid, but if we compare ourselves with kids in Scandinavia, in Japan, in other places, they're outstripping us when in the earlier grades we're up there with them. So it's clearly something that we're doing in terms of the educational system. Part of it, I think, has to do with just what we teach them. I think that we're spending an awful lot of time in the early grades concentrating in skills and not concentrating on what the kids need to know. Content. When they get a little older, they take these tests that are all about what they know. And then if you haven't learned what the Bill of Rights is, it doesn't matter how well you can sound out a word, you're not going to be able to perform well in a test. Then secondly, I do think that the middle schools lose the nurturing and enriching aspect of instruction in many of our elementary schools. If you walk into most of the elementary schools in the city, you see extraordinarily rich instruction. Then you walk into the upper grades, and I do believe that you see something missing in terms of the engagement with the kids. And then finally, if at that same time the kids are challenging the parents, they might be staying outside in the society, and nothing is taking their place in terms of the after-school programs, the parks and recreation programs, the engagement with adults, especially male adults, I think that you're going to see a drop-off in terms of our ability to hold the kids.
Well, and if you go to some schools, like charter schools, like the Crossroads School, you see actually incredible things going on. I interviewed kids from the Algebra Project who had gone there first.
Ah, the Algebra Project.
Those are some amazing kids.
Yes, absolutely.
Those kids at the Algebra Project, they're like you. They don't play.
They don't play. That they're making money out of tutoring other kids. That's what they do.
410-319-8888. And Mike, you're on the air. Let me get you on the air, though, before I said that. Now you're on the air. Go ahead.
Now I'm genuinely on the air.
Yes, you are.
Thank you, Mike.
Oh, you're welcome. And like you, Dr. Salonzo, I don't mess around either. I'm a retired teacher, and I've seen our kids wasted for so many years. I've seen good, decent educators like you doing everything you possibly can. My heart goes out to you, but my head says there's got to be a better way. If you have concentrated urban poverty, then concentrated urban violence and the waste of our youth will be a consequence. The people in this country have got to figure out how we can abolish poverty and use the creativity of our children to build a better world.
You know what? I agree with you that urban education in this country is the shame of modern-day America, in that, you know, 50 years after Brown, 40 years after King, and we're asking the same questions in terms of what's going on in terms of African-American kids in inner cities, in terms of what's going on in terms of urban education. So clearly, as a country, we need to continually ask ourselves, what is it about this nation that leads to the persistence of the achievement gap? What is it about what we're doing in our schools or in our neighborhoods and in our society that leads to this circular conversation about what needs to happen in order to make our schools better? But then that's the starting point of the conversation. I thank the fact that you know you're calling and you seem to understand where I'm coming from. But where's the solution, man? My request of people like you is that you come to the forefront. with either the recommendations yourself as a contributor in terms of our schools. I don't think we can possibly be in a mind frame where we're giving up just because the challenges are huge. It's very clear that if you concentrate huge problems in some schools or some neighborhoods, it's going to take all that much in terms of changing it. Now, what I would like from this city, and city, please pay attention, what I would like from this city is...
But the city government right now, we're talking about.
No, because the city cannot possibly be defined in terms of government agencies. It has to be the churches. It has to be the PTAs, including those who are calling, raiding me. It has to be, rather than raiding themselves, it has to be everybody. What I ask is that the... that there be, you cannot have it both ways. You cannot constantly be talking about what's wrong in the city, the school, and the communities. Therefore, asserting how difficult the problems are, and then at the same time, pushing back against the comprehensiveness of the response and saying it's going too fast, and then at the same time, requiring that there be an immediate... an immediate outcome that somehow makes it all go away. What clearly needs to happen is everybody becoming responsible for the solution. As in, for example, somebody called earlier and gave me a grade, God forbid, for funding for the schools, as though in a context where a CEO comes to Baltimore City, and 4 months after the CEO arrives, the funding formula for the schools end, and I go to Annapolis to fight for the school, and lo and behold, I don't see anybody there behind me. You have somebody calling about the funding, about giving me a grade for the funding of the school system, when the entire city should have been up in Annapolis saying the school system needs more money. I think that there are a lot of people having conversations and blaming the kids or blaming the parents rather than having a serious conversation about what needs to happen, which is reasonable in terms of what needs to happen in the schools. And let's begin with a premise that it is not reasonable to fix the school by pushing away 10, 15, 20% of the kids.
Mike, thanks for your call. Is it true that after you made this, you cut North Avenue to the bone, took all that money and put it back in the school system, to schools? Someone told me today, he said, yes, but Dr. Alonso also did, was forced to say that any new jobs open in North Avenue, the first people to get a shot at those were the ones who left North Avenue.
Well, no, I think that...
Is that true?
No, there are jobs for which I have complete flexibility in terms of hiring somebody. And then there are jobs for which I think the responsible thing is to allow people, as long as they're fit and able, to compete for them first. I mean, I didn't cut 310 positions because of an evaluation.
Right.
I cut 310 positions because of a structural need. And what
I thought it was philosophical, because you thought people that you think power should go back to schools and be decentralized. You made one quote once saying that you like to tear down North Avenue, I thought you said, and put all the power back in the schools.
Absolutely. But what I have also said is that nobody should use the restructuring as a way to bypass the law. As in, if there are labor contracts that are saying that if you get rid of a person, you must evaluate them, I don't think that people should be using the restructuring to get away from the need to evaluate performance. So if I have an administrator and if I have done away with their job, and if that administrator is fit and able to compete for some other job, I think that I have an obligation to that administrator to give them a chance to compete if they're fit and able.
Does that mean they have a priority to come back if they come back before anybody else you hire?
Only if they're fit and able. And then if they're fit and able, then they can do the job. And somebody should be evaluating them if they cannot do the job. The key thing, look, for every job, somebody should be hiring the best person for the job. But within the context of many people who are qualified for the job, if you have people who have the capacity and the ability and they're losing their job, then part of what we said from the start is we were going to work with people in order to try to place them.
I guess I just want to make it understand. I'm not trying. This is not the most important point to me, but I'm just. But
it's
the question.
Small point as far as I'm concerned.
Well, part of tearing down bureaucracies North Avenue was tearing down the blocks that allowed progress to happen because people got so entrenched in those jobs.
But look, Mark,
well, nothing changed.
Next year from now, we'll do the same thing again. I mean, I've already said this, that next year we will have to cut roughly another 300 positions. What I have said to people is they want to have tenure in the school system, they better be in schools. They cannot be in North Avenue. But what I have also said is that if I have people in my administration, the people that they've appointed, they've already been there 3, 4, 5 months. They shouldn't come to me now and say that person cannot do the job. My answer is going to be, well, where's your evaluation? They cannot simply hope for me to get to do the hard decisions for them, as in restructuring the system out of people rather than people be evaluated out of their jobs.
410-319-8888. El Zora, you're on the air.
El Zora?
El Zora.
El Zora.
How are you, Dr. Alonzo?
I am doing fine, thank you. How are you?
I am just fine. I'm a retired administrator from the Baltimore City Public Schools.
Lots of retired people calling me. Where are my present-day people?
Maybe they are doing lesson plans.
I certainly hope so. I'm hoping that they're planning collaboratively for tomorrow.
Oh, there's the word. There's the word.
At any rate, when I was in the school system, my challenging but rewarding task was to discipline the children as well as to educate the parents. I now work for a nonprofit organization called the Family Tree, and I find that I am, again, educating parents. In November of 06, I made a presentation to the suspension services at North Avenue and asked them to consider making referrals to us because we do parenting, positive parenting education, and we do parent support groups, and we do some in-home parenting and a couple other programs. But my concern is, as I work with the parents when I was in the school system, I found parents knew very little about child development and discipline strategies. And when we talk about the behavior that we see in our school systems and with our children and the suspension rate, there is a study that says problems at home, problems at school. And some of the children came to school so very depressed and demoralized that we could not expect them to function at their best. I am suggesting to you, Dr. Alonzo, that some kind of way we connect discipline, suspension, with some form of parenting education before that child or as that child is reinstated into the process of going back to class.
Oh, Dr. Alonzo?
Well, thank you. And I think it surely makes sense before a child is, when we see that there are issues of behavior with kids, to make sure that we understand that what is going on in the home and bring the parent in, not simply in order to quote-unquote educate them, since in the case of many parents, it might not be a question of education. It might simply be a question of how do they cope with individual children, but also because they might be the best partners in terms of understanding what is making the child function in a particular way. I think that you make absolute sense, and I hope that the people in the schools are bringing this kind of approach to the work. At the same time, and this is important, we cannot always abdicate the responsibility for what's going on in the school to the question of what somebody else outside the school is doing. I think that we need to own the problems together. As in, and I'll give you one example. At the end of the first grade last year in Baltimore City, there were 892 children, I believe, who score advanced in both the literacy and math section of the Stanford exam. 892. By the end of the seventh grade, there were only 83 children who were advanced in both literacy and math in the Maryland State assessment. So when you see that story of decline, and now we're not talking about the high schools, we're talking from first to seventh grade, that's about something that we're doing as well. And I think it points to the fact that we need to own the problems together.
Elsewhere, thanks for the call. Let me just push that a little further. I mean, there are two elementary schools in town, and that it's Stuart Hill Elementary and Highland Hill Elementary Middle. And a man that I've talked to about before, Dante Wilson, who happens to be a...
Whom I have seen.
Is in those two schools. Principals have said to him, we're going to use some of this money for mentoring programs. What they discovered, when you say yes, we have to own the problem, but what they discovered, let's say at Stuart Hill, was a huge body of students who are struggling. And what those students have in common is that one of their parents or both their parents are in jail. Or groups of bodies of students whose parents are alcoholic or addicted. And so they say, we got to do some intervention here to come in to save these kids. And it's the problem is outside the walls, but they have to save them inside the walls.
That's part of what I was alluding to before, Mark, in the sense that if you have a parent in jail, the question is not educating the parent. The question is understanding what is going on in the life of a child that might be triggering certain behaviors. The conversation with a parent should begin with the assumption that no parent wants their child to do badly. And the question is, what is triggering the behaviors? And maybe it requires a strong intervention in the life of the parent. Maybe it requires just information about what's happening in the school. There's no disagreement between what I'm saying and what Dante is doing in those schools. It is at some level about understanding what's going on in the life of the child. He does not come to the conversation with a presumption that the child should be punished or sent away. I know that for a fact.
Right.
He comes into the conversation with the assumption that something explains the behavior. And then what is our obligation to respond? Which is precisely the opposite of what the thrust of many of these conversations have been.
Because we cannot lose one more child in this city. We're talking to Dr. Andres Alonso, CEO of our Baltimore City Schools. Before we return to the phones at 410-319-8888. Then we read an email that came in at steinershow@gmail.com from Corey. And Corey writes in, I understand that gifted and talented students have often been shortchanged by the city school system, but I'm not sure that I understand how the $2,200 bonus per advanced child is going to solve this problem. Setting up a good G&T program takes experienced staff that know how to set up classes that challenge these students. It seems that this money is given with no strings to force it to be directed to G&T programs. It will probably be much quicker and easier to throw it into a general pool to help out the whole school. Also, it seems that neighborhood schools that lose this extra funding by sending their best students to magnet programs are now going to be reluctant to do this. Won't this eventually lead to the end of magnet programs, for example, Advanced Academic at Federal Hill for elementary, or Roland Park or Francis Scott Key Middle? You can answer that when we return from this break. Stay with us. We talk to Dr. Andres Alonso back in just a moment.
This is John Hockenberry. Join me and Adora Udoji for The Takeaway, our new morning news show for public radio. With in-depth reporting from the BBC and the New York Times, The Takeaway leaves you with things to think about, things to share, and new ways to join us in a lively conversation about issues that matter. The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
The Takeaway, weekdays at 7 a.m. right here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Hello, this is Gary Ullaby, inviting you to tune in to some more fine programming on WEAA. It's a show called Stolen Moments, coming your way Monday through Friday, 12 a.m. to 6 a.m. It's rich in tradition, history, and most importantly, jazz. We begin each night with a concert celebrating an artist's birthday, new release, or upcoming appearance. That's Stolen Moments with primetime Gary Ullaby, Monday through Friday, 12 a.m. to 6 a.m. on the voice of the community, Public Radio 88.9 FM, WEAA.
Have you ever wondered about submitting a public service announcement to WEAA? We gladly accept PSAs from state-registered nonprofit organizations. Your submission must include event description, date, location, and phone number. WEAA reserves the right to edit all copy for broadcast. We're delighted to partner with our community to help publicize events, but airtime is limited, and we cannot guarantee that all PSAs will be broadcast. All submissions must be emailed at least 3 weeks in advance to psa@weaa.org.
WEAA Baltimore, 88.9 FM, reminds you that the views expressed on WEAA programs are those of participants and not necessarily those of Morgan State University, the staff, management, or underwriters of Baltimore's home for cool jazz. WEAA, 88.9 FM.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here with Dr. Andres Alonso, CEO of our Baltimore City Schools, 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com here on WEAA, the voice of the community at 88.9. You were going to answer the email question about gifted and talent problems and money.
Well, first of all, whoever wrote that email, I mean, they're very sophisticated about what we did, so hopefully they work for me.
You're going to claim this email.
Hopefully. Secondly, first of all, we're not giving a $2,200 bonus for every child who scored advanced. I mean, part of what the writer is missing is that we're extrapolating the percentage of kids in a lower grade, the first grade or the fifth grade, in order to be able to have much more money for these kinds of programs, because if we went by the actual number of kids who are doing this well in our schools, the number dwindles dramatically as the kids get older. If we, by the time we get to the seventh grade, only 83 kids are doing double advance, then we're no longer talking gifted programs, we're talking something else. So the hope is to dramatically increase the funding from 4.5 to 22 million so that schools develop the flexibility to create these kinds of programs. We put in guidance in what went to schools that asked that schools had these kinds of programs in place, and we're going to analyze the budgets that are coming from the schools in order to make sure that they happen. In the meantime, if a school like Roland Park wants to continue its advanced programs, they've gotten a lot more money as a result of this, methodology of distributing the dollars, and they should be able to.
But now that's part of the problem that you've been facing with schools saying we're losing money because of this process, your budget process. And someone called and said, well, Waverly Middle is going to lose all this money. Roland Park's getting more money. They're already serving a wealthier community. Why should they get more money and Waverly get less?
Because the dollars should follow the student. Anything that was done beforehand where some schools got more and other schools got less was inequitable, number one, unbacked by a transparent logic. What everybody in the city should be completely convinced of is that if a school is getting less, it's because the same methodology is being used to fund them as another school, and they're getting less because they either have fewer kids, they've lost enrollment, or they were getting more before and they were being subsidized by another school that was getting less. And the reality is that with our budgets becoming far more difficult to address, we put in a methodology for funding the schools that treats everybody fairly, pushes the money into the schools with greater responsibility so that the hard decisions are made at the school level. Now, we have 101 schools that have lost an average of 50 kids. Part of the problem is that you have people coming to me saying, I cannot keep my staff. Well, why would you be expected to keep the same staff if you have lost 50 students? That's the reality of the hard decisions that we face as a system. The best way of continuing to grow as a system is to make sure that the kids don't leave, as in keep them in our schools, prevent them from dropping out, and then our budgets will increase. If the kids are leaving and people just want to hire the same people that they had before, it's not going to work. In the meantime, we have 122 schools that are getting an average of $420,000 more than last year. That's 122 schools, $420,000 more. So the dollars is there in the overwhelming majority of the schools. There are some schools that are in a different position as last year because they were being funded inequitably. Is that simple?
Andres Alonso is our guest in a special town meeting. Emily, in your car, you're on the air.
You get to ask the last question, Emily.
No, there's maybe two or three more. Emily, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark, and good evening, Dr. Alonso.
Hi.
I had two comments and two questions.
Oh, my God, and we only got four minutes.
We may only have time for one. Let's take one at a time.
Real quickly, on the caller about the changing the grades to 60, I believe this was before your time, Dr. Alonso. This was so that the failing grade is equitable across the state. Why should city schools be judged at failing at 70 and all other schools judged at 60? That was one.
Okay.
The other thing was what happened with the funding for the algebra project. You find projects and programs that do work. And your predecessor, again, was the children were protesting because they were trying to cancel the algebra project. They were trying to get Dr. J and fire him and all of that. That's a program that is known to work. Dr. Moses has it implemented across the country.
Robert Moses,
there
right.
is no discrimination in mathematics. Let's get that algebra project so that all the middle schoolers can get the peer tutoring through the algebra project.
All right.
That would be a good thing. And the last comment and question is, whatever happened when Kurt Schmoke was trying to get the money for the schools because of the way that the state determines how money goes to the school. That has never been equitably evened out, although there was millions of dollars won in lawsuits.
Okay, we have just such a little time left, and Andres, let me let you respond to this question.
Okay, I know that's a big question.
Thank you, Emily.
And thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you, and I'll go backwards. In terms of the state funding, I mean, as you said, that's a huge issue. I walked into it very late. Clearly, the school system has never been adequately funding. And unfortunately, I wasn't here 4 years ago when we were getting a lot of more money every year. And we take what we have, and we're going to make it work. The algebra project, I am a huge backer of peer leadership projects, the work that kids are doing in order to support each other. The algebra project is not finished in the Baltimore City public schools. My expectation is that, on the contrary, that they will grow as a result of the funding in the schools. And I've been very clear in terms of that expectation. And then in terms of the grades, thank you for the information.
That's true, by the way. She said, what about programs like the Urban Debate League? Are they in danger?
Same for Budo. My expectation is that they be there growing. If that doesn't happen, then I need to go back and go back to the drawing board.
Dr. Andres Alonso, thank you so much for being here tonight in the special town meeting here on WEAA. It's been great to have you with us.
It's a tremendous pleasure to hear from the town. So You heard what I need.
So thank you, Andres, for being here. And so we can get to all the callers. You've been tuned to a production of the Center of Emerging Media. Our program tonight was produced by Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. Our engineer is Zachary Coleman. He's also the operations and production manager here at WEAA. Special thanks to Courtney Alston and LaFontaine Oliver, who helped make this special broadcast possible. And for WEAA, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner, and take care.